bulbs. They produce some of the most desirable flowers we all know and love. But a bulb can be really confusing to an amateur gardener. We look at this little stub in our hands that has no green attached to it and think, seriously, a daffodil is going to sprout up from this thing? As tropical houseplant growers, bulbs can be a totally different game when it comes to care, with different sets of tips to be mindful of. And today, we're lucky to be joined by Jenks Farmer, a bulb expert and lifelong gardener who joins us today to break down everything we need to know about the beauty and basics of bulbs. So, plant friends, welcome to episode 150 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hello, 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 plant friends. I hope you've had beautifully planty weeks as per usual. Oh boy, it's been very exciting over here after the announcement of Growing Joy for Bloom and Grow. Oh my God. Thank you for all the support. It has been so exciting to finally be able to really talk about this book and the blood, sweat, tears, and joy that has gone into the creation of it for the last 2 years, plant friends. It's been almost 2 years behind the scenes of putting this book together. So if you didn't hear, you can go listen to the announcement on last week's episode. But also, if you're ready to just support it, I'd love for you to pre-order the book. Those pre-orders mean a lot. They tell vendors that this book is going to sell. So pre-ordering the book is very important. So thank you in advance. There's a link in the show notes for you to check out Growing Joy, the Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness and Plants. My first book. I'm a first-time author, and it's all about how we can use plants as a tool for self-care. It is a true plant care meets self-care book. But anyway, we're learning a big lesson today, a bulb lesson. Bulbs can be so confusing, but they are the most amazing way to fill our yards and homes with flowers. I really got into them when I was gardening with Melody last summer because she had really beautiful dahlias and all sorts of gorgeous flowering bulb plants in her garden. They were foreign to me. I've never really done that, but I always know my mom has planted bulbs her entire life, but they can be intimidating. So Jenks, our guest Jenks today, who is a bulb expert, he just published a book on crinums, which he talks about a little bit at the end of the episode. He joins us today for this great conversation on the basics of bulbs, what they are, how to plant them. He answers all of our questions. I hope you enjoy it as much as I do and that you enjoy his soothing Southern accent as much as I did as well throughout this conversation. So without further ado, here's Jenks. Jenks, welcome to Bloom and Grow Radio. I'm so excited to have you on today.
Thanks, Maria. Happy to be here.
First, before we dive into all things bulbs, which frankly, for me, they're still kind of a mystery. I still kind of get confused with how to properly plant them and celebrate them and their beautiful blooms. Let's talk about Jenks, otherwise known as Augustus Farmer, and how you came to be the crinum and bulb expert that you are today.
You know, you're going back a long way. In the 70s, I got some of my first bulbs. I got my first crinum in the 70s, along with paper whites and daffodils and all those sort of standard bulbs when my family moved onto this old farm that had generations of things layered in the garden and even layered into the lawn. So that piqued my interest. Even, you know, as a boy, I was amazed by what was underground, these underground structures that could produce something so delicate and ephemeral and then just go away again. I ended up as an adult working in a botanical garden, and one of my jobs was to define the core collections for that garden. And what that means is, if you think about an art museum may have a collection of paintings of one era, right? Or paintings or sculptures of one type. Botanical gardens do the same thing. They have a core collection, and it's plants of this genus or plants that look great at night. So my job was to define that. And one of the plants that we came up with for this garden, Riverbanks Botanical Garden in Columbia, South Carolina, was crinum, which are sometimes called milk and wine lilies. So that cemented my interest in bulbs, and I have been doing them ever since.
Very cool. So I've been mispronouncing it. It's crinum, not crinum.
Well, no, Maria, actually, it depends on where you're from.
Right. So I'm from New York.
So you can say it any way you like.
Yeah, I think too, on Bloom and Grow Radio, we definitely say, don't worry about mispronouncing plant Latin. Just try. Use the plant Latin, pronounce it however you want, but we want to just encourage people to use the proper terms. So I'll go Crinum. And like, so you're in the South. So you're growing in what zone?
I am zone 8.
Okay, cool.
So, and I've done a little bit of work in New York, and we've sent our bulbs to, we have our bulbs at Brooklyn Botanic and New York Botanic Garden. Just to give you an idea, we have a much longer growing season than you, but then we do get some cold weather, like it was 24 last two nights ago. We just don't have it for the duration that you would have it in New York.
Got it. Where do we begin, Jenks? Also, how do you go from Augustus to Jenks?
I have a, an old school Southern name. My name is Augustus Jenkins Farmer III. And that is just way too much for any little boy to carry around. So I don't know. It got shortened to Jenks when I was a kid.
I love it. Yeah. Jenks is a man of a gardening man. So where do we begin? Bulbs, these, like you said, these little potato looking like things, you know, that we stick in the ground and they spurt forth the most amazing flowers. So I think people get confused with the term bulb and what it actually means and what it is, like how it grows and reproduces. So can you kind of break down what a bulb is?
Okay, let's talk in botanist terms. Just for a minute, we're just going to delve into some of the botanical terms. When you use the word bulb and you're a botanist or a professional horticulturalist, you're talking about this swollen up thing that lives underground and pops out some leaves and flowers and roots at a certain season and then goes back underground. And it's a big energy storage system, right? It's a way to have all these carbohydrates stored underground so that that plant can survive wildfire or floods or being eaten by animals. In botanical terms, a bulb is a plant that has inflated or swollen leaves. And those things are gathered together like an onion. So an onion is a true bulb. But there are other things in botanical terms that are slightly different. So if something has, say, a swollen root, think about ginger or turmeric. Those are not technically bulbs. Those are actually rhizomes. And then there are all these other different kind of swellings, I guess, different ways to store energy underground. And that's important to botanists, but to gardeners and to me and to you, to use the general term bulb is easy and accurate. And you know what we're talking about. Anything that lives below ground and shoots up for the season, brings us some beautiful flowers, and then goes back below ground.
All right. So moving forward, that's how we'll refer to bulb. And it sounds like that differentiation is the type of tissue that it is. But I agree, we don't need to be concerned with it. It's also kind of mind-blowing to really understand, yeah, the onions that we cook with every day, those are bulbs. I don't equate an onion with a daffodil or a paperwhite, but it's the same.
Exactly. Those are actually leaves. If you think about cutting an onion, or if you took a daffodil bulb and cut it, you could see those layers of leaves inside that bulb.
Yeah, amazing. Alliums. We can talk about alliums for a minute because that's what onions are, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So there are lots of ornamental alliums. Some of my favorites are the little tiny ones. Mm-hmm. They're yellow ones and pink ones and white ones, and they just grow like 6 inches tall. But then there are these giant ones that you see them in bulb catalogs and often in English garden magazines where there are these big purple spheres that float through the May garden. Those, depending on your climate, are a little more difficult to grow. So for me, in our climate, we can grow those big ones for one season, but then they die out. They do not like our summer heat and humidity. But if you're really into that look, I think a fun way to get it is to use elephant garlic, which you sometimes see in farmers markets. And elephant garlic is looks a lot like those big purple spherical alliums.
Yeah, they're such a beautiful texture in the garden. My mom used them in her house in New York. And yeah, I feel like you get so much green, right, in the garden. Purple, I feel like you just don't see purple flowers as much. So I think alliums are a beautiful, beautiful addition to kind of just add interesting texture for sure.
Yeah, I love alliums. And I like to use anything that you can also eat. So like the big elephant garlic, it's beautiful in the garden through the summer. And then when it starts to dry up, like in June, you can dig it and use it in cooking.
Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled, or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for like 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up so good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is like basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today. I want to dive into more bulb basics, but I have to take this opportunity since we're talking about alliums. We had a member of our garden society want to ask you about alliums. She's interested in zone B and wants to know the best time to plant them outdoors. And will the plants reproduce over time so that a few bulbs will generate many plants for the future?
I think she was in zone 7B, which is somewhere in between New York and South Carolina. Mm-hmm. A lot of the big ones will do okay there, but they will diminish over time. So if you really want something that's going to perennialize and settle in and live with you for a long time, I would go with some of the smaller alliums. There's one called drumstick allium that's a real dark purple. It's about the size of a, not quite as big as a golf ball. So it's not a huge flower.
Oh, little. Okay.
Yeah. And then some of the tiny ones, the unifolium, Allium unifolium, is 6 inches tall, but it has beautiful pink flowers, and it will definitely naturalize. You know, Maria, I'm going to take this to a little bit more general terms. All of the bulbs that people know, alliums, tulips, daffodils, snowdrops, that people know commonly, those things all come from Mediterranean climates. So Turkey, Greece, and they like a dry, hot summer. Well, we never have a dry, hot summer in the South, and you all rarely do in the summer. But a lot of those bulbs do not perennialize well for us because they need that dry baking period in the summer.
Oh, so do they rot out? If we're living someplace that gets a lot of precipitation, those bulbs, they can't make it?
Yeah, they can rot out. Now, you all in the Northeast, you have much better luck with, say, crocus, snowdrops, and even some of the tulips than we do. But when we're talking about whether something is perennial or not, it completely depends on your climate. And I think that's important to remember. If you're in a climate or a garden, even a specific garden that has a very wet soil, then you need to look for bulbs that are from places that have wet climates. So instead of, say, snowdrops, you could grow something like snowflake, which looks a lot like it. It's in the genus Lycodium, but it's from southern Spain and it's from wet areas. So that that southern snowflake, or that Lycodium, because it's from wet places, will perennialize and grow really well and come back year after year after year. I have some of those that are older than I am.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And yeah, just to throw a couple of definitions for those listening who maybe are like total garden newbies, annuals versus perennials. And he's saying perennialize, meaning turning it, you know, having it be perennials. Annual is something you plant once and it dies and you're happy for it to live once in your life, you know, one season. And then perennials are stuff that you ideally plant and they keep coming back year after year.
Exactly.
So, and ideally with these bulbs, you know, you've got to like dig, you've got to plant them, you've got to wait patiently. So once you do the all of that setup, you hope to ideally perennialize something. You mentioned another term called naturalize. What did you mean by that?
In a garden, in an outdoor garden, when you have something perennialized, that means that, to me, that means that it stays in its place, it stays in the bed you put it, and it's there for years.
Okay.
If something naturalizes, that means that it's going to set seeds, or it's going to send out some kind of a runner or something, and it's going to move around in your garden. So that's what I'm talking about from a gardening level. From an environmental level, if we were taking it just a step further, if that thing were to escape out into the wild and become a problem, then you would call that naturalizing into the wild ecosystem.
Got it. Okay. So something that's going to kind of take on a natural life of its own without you having to manipulate it.
Right.
Because I definitely want to ask you about dividing bulbs later in this conversation. But before we get there, let's talk about how do bulbs grow and when to plant them? Because I feel like that gets confusing. All I've done is edible gardening. So I go, I buy my basil when it warms up, I plant it in the garden, it grows for the summer. That's been, you know, my experience. So with bulbs, there's more of a strategy with fall and winter. So how does that work, and why is that important?
Well, it depends on the bulb. So within bulbs, there are fall flowering bulbs and spring flowering bulbs and summer flowering bulbs. And generally, you plant those things ahead, a season ahead of the time you expect them to flower. So if you're looking for daffodils, tulips, jonquils, you plant all of those things in the fall. So for you, I suppose, throughout New York, probably before Thanksgiving, you get those things in the ground. The first thing they do underground is grow out a set of roots that you probably don't even see. And then they start to grow up in the spring and produce flowers in the late spring. If you were looking for summer flowering bulbs, dahlias, crinums, amaryllis, gladiolus,
peonies?
Peonies are a little bit different.
Oh, okay.
Let's get peonies for now. We'll come back.
But dahlias, oh my God, the star of a cut flower garden. I feel like dahlias are amazing.
Oh, exactly. And they're so easy. And they work in containers or in tiny gardens. But all of those things come on in the summer for foliage and flower. So you would plant them in the springtime when your soil is warming up. There's a whole nother set of bulbs, fall flowering bulbs, red spider lilies, sometimes people call them British soldiers, fall flowering crocus, those kind of things you can plant almost any time through early spring through midsummer. So it just depends on what you want, what you're looking for. And then, of course, one other option is that almost all of these things you can grow in a container inside. So if you're going to do that, then the time of year is similar to what we just talked about, but you can manipulate it a little bit more.
Right. And let's dive into that because so if you're planning it a season ahead, it's the temperature changes of the ground that's going to trigger the bulbs to grow.
Exactly. You know, there's a cool word that I like a lot. It's called geophyte. The word is geophyte. So geophyte refers to all of these things. And what it means is earth lover. So it's important to remember with bulbs, the most important thing for their health and longevity is the conditions in the earth. Now, honestly, that's true for a lot of things, but for bulbs particularly.
Got it. Okay. So when we're trying, because I feel like I love the term, I mean, the term is forcing bulbs indoors. I love an amaryllis, a paper white, any type of blooming bulb indoors in the winter in New York in the winter, because we're, you know, I've got 2 feet of snow outdoors and there's nothing better than like forcing some bulbs in like a glass vase. And I feel like when you read about that online, it talks a lot about sticking them in the fridge. So I guess you're replicating that.
Yeah, but there are a couple ways to do that. If you buy your bulbs, you get them from a nursery center or get them mailed to you, your daffodils, jonquils, paperwhites, amaryllis, scilla, hyacinth, all of those are easy things to force. So you can just stick the bulbs in the fridge. The way I like to do it is to pot them up. Go ahead and pot them up before you put them in the fridge and then just put all of those pots outside. And therefore, you're getting that cold treatment naturally without taking up your space in the fridge. So then when you're ready to force it, say Christmas, you just bring one of those pots in and the heat inside, the warming of the soil starts to force those things into flower. Usually takes like 6 weeks.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great idea. I also am when it comes to this kind of stuff, I feel like I take the easy route. And so normally I even buy them pre-potted at the nursery center that they've already gone through that conditioning. So I can just enjoy the blooming process. But I figured I'd ask for people who want to do a DIY setup.
You know, you can also do some bulbs in water, like hyacinths. They're the only bulb that have a little special vase that's made for them. They're called hyacinth vases. But you could take a hyacinth bulb and put it, you could put some marbles or some rocks in like a mason jar or a spaghetti jar or whatever, a little bit of water on the bottom, a couple of hyacinth bulbs, and they will pop right up and flower in that jar.
And then you have that amazing scent. Ooh.
Right.
Nothing says spring like hyacinth blooms, at least for me in my New York temperature climate.
You know, I'll never forget going to Rockefeller Center one winter, and the place was filled with flowers. The trees were in flower, and there were 10,000 hyacinths in flower.
Really?
Yeah. And I started looking, I was like, this isn't right. And I started looking really closely, and I realized they were all silk.
I was going to say, they must have been fake. I'm like, no way, hyacinths.
They were all fake, but you could smell them. And so I started looking, I was like, how do they do this? They had little tiny fragrance capsules that they had dropped in around all the bulbs. So it smelled like hyacinths.
So extra, such drama. I love it. Yeah. Another bulb that I love upstate, one of my favorite parts of spring. I mean, we all go crazy in the winter. March, April rolls around. We finally thaw. The snow finally melts. And when little crocuses, you know, pop their little purple heads out and it's, you know, this dirty gray, it's a really interesting picture, this dirty gray melting snow and these beautiful purple crocus popping out. It's like the beacon of spring coming. It's like, everybody knows we're almost there, like hang in there. The sun is coming.
Yeah. So much optimism in those little flowers. And crocus, I should have said, are so easy. And, you know, just a tiny pot of crocus, easy to force, beautiful, rewarding. Makes awesome little gifts to take to people for a like a little housewarming gift.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So let's talk about how the bulbs grow as well. You said they start growing roots, then they grow shoots. But I feel like also the talk of like dividing bulbs, like I remember in the spring, my mom will like divide and replant all like her bulbs sometimes. So how do they actually grow and how do you do that?
Most bulbs grow as a clump. So if you plant one over the time, they have what I call pups. They make these little tiny bulbs off to the sides. And over time, you end up with a clump of 10 or 15 or so or more bulbs. Those are easy to divide. In fact, a lot of bulbs need dividing. They need that rejuvenation. The key to doing that successfully is to do it as that foliage starts to die off in the late spring. What that foliage is doing is acting as a little solar collector to force energy and to collect energy for the bulb for next season. So if you move that bulb while the leaf is green and trying to build energy, you can really hurt the bulb and really slow it down. So then it would take a long time to recover. But if you wait for that foliage to start turning yellow, that's the time to move them. When you divide bulbs, you just dig that clump and kind of break it apart with your hands. Sometimes you'll need water to force it apart. And then you let those bulbs go dormant above ground. And you can save them till the fall and plant them, or you can just plant them back like in midsummer. That would be for tulips, daffodils, crocus, all the spring bulbs that we were just talking about.
Thank you so much to our episode sponsors, Espoma Organic and Territorial Seed Company. Spring is here, plant friends, and if you haven't already, it's time to start planting your gardens, and Espoma Organic has you covered when it comes to all of the things that you're going to be putting your plants in. So first off, they are a family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet. And whether you are gardening in ground, in raised beds, in containers, or indoors, they can set you up for success with their organic compost, fertilizers, and potting mix for whatever type of gardening you're doing. They really have different mixes for everything. They have a raised bed mix, container mix, in-ground compost. If you're gardening indoors, they have an amazing line of indoor potting mixes for cacti and succulents, African violets, even bonsai. And I really love their liquid houseplant food because you literally just pour this bottle directly into your watering can. It makes fertilizing your houseplants stupidly simple. And to top it all off, they're a family-run company, which I adore, and they have a huge sustainability commitment. They have zero waste manufacturing, 100% solar-powered plant, and eco-friendly packaging. To learn more about their indoor and outdoor products, visit Espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or click the link in the show notes to check out the Bloom & Grow Espoma Amazon storefront to see my favorite picks to order online. Okay, plant friends, if you're looking for plants or seeds for your garden this spring, skip the lines at the garden center. You don't need to throw elbows at the garden center anymore to get the prized tomato plants. Let Territorial Seed Company deliver top-of-the-line, healthy and hearty vegetable plants and seeds right to your door. Last week, I talked about the high-quality vegetable plants that Territorial will ship right to you with 100% guarantee. But they also have exciting new lines of seeds for you seed starting lovers. So for us indoor growers, I'm really excited about their new kitchen counter collection that's new for 2022. It's a selection of vegetables specifically bred to grow and produce in small spaces and lower light. So if you're looking to try and grow food indoors, you should check out that kitchen counter collection. And speaking of small spaces, they also have a wide variety of container-friendly seeds and plants, including butterbush winter squash, patio snacker cucumbers, I freaking love that name, I'm definitely going to try that this season, and little Napoli tomatoes. Enjoy the bounty of a home garden right on your patio. Whether it's seeds, plants, garden planters, or more, Territorial Seed Company can set you up for success when it comes to your 2022 garden, and they have an exclusive coupon code for Bloom & Grow Radio listeners. Visit territorialseed.com and use code GROW10, GROW10, at checkout to get your 10% off. Okay, back to Jenks.
Okay, so you can just let them dry out for the remainder of the season and then replant them as long as they're dry.
The key to keeping those bulbs is to keep them dry. And like lots of people will put them in paper bags, put them in a basement somewhere where they're just gonna dry out so they don't get fungus.
Does it make more sense to plant them before the winter comes back, or does it make sense to just throw them in your basement until the following? Oh no, because the spring you have to plant them before the winter because then they pop up after. Okay, so yeah,
that's right.
Wait throughout the. Okay, got it.
But then there are other bulbs, and I think one of your listeners asked about caladiums. Caladiums are a real common foliage bulb, right? They don't have flowers that not that we pay much attention to. They have these big elephant ear like leaves that are pink and red and white and all mottled together.
They're stunning.
Yeah, they're really beautiful. They're generally used as an annual. So some people will save them over the winter. So you would do the same thing, the end of the season, which would be end of August or so. They're going to start looking kind of wilty and yellow. You could dig those in, leave them out on a table or somewhere to dry out, let the leaves dry out, and then clean those bulbs, not with a scrub brush or anything, just to get some of the dirt and old roots off, and put them in a box with sawdust and a little bit of sulfur. And sulfur is what keeps bulbs from getting fungus when you're storing them. And it's easy to get. You can get it in pharmacies, maybe some really good garden centers, farm stores if you're in a rural place. And you just dust a little bit of that sulfur on, and it protects those bulbs from rot over the storage season.
And is that for any type of bulbs or specifically for caladium?
Caladiums particularly need something to protect them from fungus, but you can use that for any kind of bulb.
Yeah, that sounds like a great precautionary measure to take.
I will tell you, like with caladiums, they will diminish over time. So you can store them like that a couple of years, but it gets harder and harder. So I tend to buy caladiums every year and use them just as an annual.
Yeah. You know, caladiums are an interesting plant. There's been a lot of conversation in the houseplant community too, that they're this beautiful plant that you could keep indoors year round, but they're kind of tricky. You know, they're tricky kind of to keep as houseplants, I think. And I feel like they definitely are the best as annuals. I feel like as I'm primarily an indoor plant parent. I'll hopefully have my first official garden this next summer. The idea of like investing in annuals and then losing that money is interesting, but at the same time, it sounds like annuals tend to be the most beautiful, kind of colorful, like fun blooms and foliage that you can get. So I guess it's about like striking that balance.
Right. They're kind of the fireworks.
Yeah.
Right. You want the fireworks at 4th of July, but you also want to have some nice garden lighting the rest of the year too. If you're going to do indoor bulbs, one of my favorites, it's a really rare one, is called blood lily. And blood lily is an awesome one that you can keep all year round. It has a beautiful leaf. So it's not quite as dramatic as caladiums, but it's a good big broad leaf. It almost looks like a hosta leaf. And then when it flowers in the middle of summer, it has a softball size flower that is brilliant scarlet, kind of a little orange twinge. Mm-hmm. So that's a cool one to keep inside. They're such enthusiasts and houseplant enthusiasts with that there's an entire Facebook group for that plant.
Wow, the blood lily. Yeah. Interesting. Inside scoop. So if I'm keeping it indoors, is it going to go dormant or is it only going to bloom once a year if it's not subject to temperatures and outdoor stuff?
So most bulbs have to have some period of dormancy, even if they don't go completely dormant. Like an amaryllis, you can keep amaryllis in pots for years, but they need to have a period that you let them dry out. So they'll look a little rough over that period, although they maintain some leaves.
Okay.
So a couple of other interesting ones that are just one-offs, you know, they're fun to have. Gloriosa lily, have you ever grown those?
I've never grown them, but I know them. They're beautiful.
They're like little chandeliers. They're like golden chandeliers. But the crazy thing about Gloriosa is that it's a bulb that's also a vine.
Mm.
So it's a climbing bulb. One more that was grown in Victorian era as an indoor bulb is called pineapple lily. So pineapple lilies make a great container plant. You can grow them inside all the time, or you can take them down, say in the winter, you can put them in a closet or a basement or just kind of let them go dormant. But pineapple lilies have this long extended flower that's about 8 to 10 inches tall and thousands of little tiny flowers, but they're on a stalk that looks like a pineapple. And some of their flowers are green. Some of them are bright red. Burgundy red. We grow one called Coco and Maraschino. And those are like deep purples and fragrant. So I like pineapple lilies as an indoor plant too.
Oh, wow. That sounds amazing. Yeah. The whole world of lilies and crinums and all these bulbs, it's so foreign to me because I don't have outdoor space that I own yet, but I'm so excited to get into it. So let's talk about planting bulbs. We did have one of our Garden Society members had a question about, Otis wanted to know if it really matters if you have to plant the bulb right side up. So what are best practices? And I think that also gets confusing. You get this bag of bulbs at the garden center, you come home, and how do you know how to properly plant it? So what are best practices when planting bulbs?
Well, let's start with that. Does it have to be planted right side up? The short answer is no.
Okay.
Just like you, if you fall down in a dark room, you know which way is up, right? Bulbs have other ways of perceiving which way is up. So the bulb does not have to be planted right side up, but it can delay their flowering, and it can sometimes cause them to have a contorted flower. So if you have time and if you can, then you want to get the pointy side up. And basically, that's the answer, is look for the pointy side.
Look for the pointy side. That's where the shoots are going to grow?
Yeah, generally. There are some bulbs that they look like peanut chocolate bars or something, right? They're almost impossible to tell what goes up. So I tend to, like anemones, I tend to just put those in the ground and hope for the best.
Okay. All right. So don't like stress yourself out. And then with planting, how important is the soil that I'm planting it in? Do bulbs need certain soil or amendments in order to help them grow?
I don't do any specific amendments. The key is making sure that your bulb, the kind of bulb that you're planting, is adapted to your soil moisture. So like I said earlier, a lot of these bulbs are from dry places. And if you put them in a wet bed, a place that your air conditioner drips or a hose leaks all the time or something like that, most bulbs are not going to like that. So the quality of your soil, like amending it, is not all that important, but making sure your bulbs don't rot is very important.
Okay.
So as far as fertilizing, I don't do fertilizing in the fall when I plant. Some people do, but I wait until the spring, right after your bulbs have flowered. Then I add a compost or some other organic fertilizer. Think about what that bulb is doing now. It's trying to collect lots of light and lots of nutrients, and it's trying to beef up the bulb below ground so it'll be ready for the summer and then ready for next year. So I do a compost or something like Bulb Tone.
Yeah, Espoma, our sponsor partner, they make a great bulb. Shout out. They make a bulb product, bulb fertilizer.
And they're organic. And our lily farm is totally organic. So I think that's really important that you treat your flowers and houseplants and things as well as you would your food crops. One of the most important things with all bulb planting is to get the depth right.
Okay.
Bulbs, they can be very particular about that. The general rule is 3 times the size of the bulb.
So, oh, interesting. Okay. So
if you get a daffodil that's 2 inches, then you want to plant it 3 times 2, okay, about 6 inches. I hardly ever go quite that deep. And that's true for ground planting, not so much for planting in pots. But you have a 1/4 inch crocus or a 1/2 inch crocus, you just want to go about 1 inch deep, right? That's a really good rule.
And what about planting in pots?
Planting in pots, I generally do things a little bit more shallow, especially when you're forcing, because you're not so much worried about that bulb developing a great root system and coming back next year. And then sometime in pots, if you're doing something like a blood lily, or a crinum lily or an amaryllis in pots, part of the beauty of it is to see that bulb pushing itself out the pot. So I love to see an amaryllis potted halfway. because then you get to see the beauty of that thing kind of erupting. You get to see the thing that's normally underground, and it becomes almost a sculpture.
Yeah. And now, I mean, you see all these wacky ways people do amaryllis, like putting them in wax, not even putting them in soil, or all sorts of weird ways to present them. But that is very pretty to have the bulb halfway above the soil for sure. So this episode should be coming out March, April. So it's time to plant. So we're in the spring. So we should be seeing our crocus, our daffodils, our what else? We should be seeing those.
You'll see those things coming into flower, but it's not time to plant those, right? It's time to plant your summer flowering bulbs.
Okay. So can we go take a tour through all of the seasons and maybe get a couple of great recommendations that you might suggest for our community?
Okay. So you want to start with spring?
Yeah.
If it's March right now, so what you're going to see flowering right now would be tulips, some alliums coming in, jonquils and daffodils, which are basically the same thing. Those are just different names for the same plant. Snowdrops, one of my absolute favorites, and I think it's way underused, are snowflakes, and that's Lycodium.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things you see most commonly in the springtime, but there are a bunch of other things that come around in the spring. Iris, of course.
Oh, irises are my favorite.
In the next season through the summer, we've already talked about dahlias, right? But you should be thinking in March about planting your dahlias, gloriosa lilies that we talked about, all kinds of true lilies, the blood lilies. There's something we haven't talked about that's kind of a crazy thing that I really like because of its leaf. It's one big giant leaf, and it's called Voodoo Lily.
Ooh.
So, no, I love that name. Voodoo Lily has this one big leaf that comes up. It'll get waist high, and it has this stalk, a fat stalk, as fat as a banana. And the stalk is leopard skin green. So it's all spotty and beautiful and reptilian. Other summer bulbs would be crinums, the thing that I specialize in. So you would plant them now, March or into April, when the soil is starting to warm up. Canna lilies, those are very common, beautiful garden plants. You know, people even include elephant ears. You'll see those coming into garden shops right now, the big elephant ears, which some of them make great pot plants and container plants. It just depends on the different species. And then if you go into fall, what you'll see in flower in the fall, some of those things continue like dahlias, but you'll see little things called autumn crocus, which are a yellow crocus. Or they're a relative of crocus, but they come in September, October. The red spider lilies that we mentioned earlier, that's all I can think of for the fall flowers right now.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And, you know, we can't not talk about crinum. You're the crinum guy. So for people who might be interested in experimenting with something that's new, that isn't just your standard daffodil or dahlia, I'm excited to explore the wild world of crinum. So what draws you to them so much?
I think it's their size. They have these big bulbs. It can be as big as a softball. And then when they clump together, you can get a clump of crinum bulbs. It weighs like 400 or 500 pounds.
Yeah, what's the biggest you've seen?
About 500 pounds, which is something we had to chain up with a tractor. We dug all the way around it, like the size of a little kiddie swimming pool, and chained it up with a tractor and pulled it out and broke those apart. So I think it's that, although there are some tiny crinums too. One of my favorites is called Minihune, and it looks almost like a daylily leaf. But the leaf is rich burgundy purple. So
wow.
Crinums come from all around the world in subtropical places. There are aquatic crinums. I've been in Madagascar walking through this river like chest deep. And there were crinums flowering all around me, almost like water lilies, like floating on the surface.
Wow.
So I guess the size is part of it. The flowers, of course, right? The fireworks, that's what we all are attracted to. Crinums come in rich, hot, very modern pinks. as well as whites. And one of the common names is milk and wine lily. And that refers to the fact that some of them are white and have a burgundy, like a red wine colored stripe down the middle. So we have this farm in South Carolina. It's an organic, organically managed farm. We grow things in rows in the ground, and we mail order only. So we ship things all across the country. We have bulbs growing from, we have them in the Pittsburgh Zoo and the Denver Botanical Garden, Hollister House up your way, a couple of botanical gardens up that way.
Are you able to grow crinums across the country? Are there certain zones that they can only live in?
Yeah, so crinums have traditionally been thought of as deep south only, but part of what I've been able to do in my career is to share them. So share them with lots of botanical gardens and ask them to test them. So now we know that they'll grow into the Northeast, all through Texas and up the California and Pacific coast. They don't do great in the really cold center of the country.
Mm. Could you use them as an annual, where, or could you plant them for your, you know, warm months and then take them out of the ground, bring them indoors, and then replant them every year?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. People do that. Like they would canna lilies or, you know, or any other tropical S bulbs, elephant ears, those kind of things that you use in the summer, bring them into a garage or a basement and store them for the winter.
Okay.
Maria, you know, I wrote this book about crinums and I was reluctant to write it because it seemed like such a geeky thing to do, to write a book about this one obsession of mine.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, God, do you really want to read about the person that collects, you know, kitty cat salt and pepper shakers? You know, that's kind of how I felt.
The equivalent in the plant world. That's great.
But I tried really hard to tell stories of these plants. I delve into the medicinal uses, how they've been used in traditional medicine in Africa, how they are being used today in current medicine, and also some of the romantic stories about them. One of the cool things about them is that they get passed around. So anywhere I go in the South, somebody's going to come up to me and say, I have this crinum that my Aunt Lily got from a botanist at Harvard in 1911, and we've been growing it ever since. And every one of the grandchildren has it. And, you know, I love those kind of stories. And I shared a lot of those stories in the book, too.
That's beautiful. Yeah, it sounds like they're kind of a part of Southern culture.
Definitely part of Southern culture.
Yeah. There's a definite similarity with houseplants. It's like, you know, you get, we call them heirloom houseplants, where you've taken a cutting from someone and her plant was a cutting from someone. And it's, you know, I have listeners that have their great, great, great grandmother's, you know, jade plant. So it sounds very similar.
Those kind of layers are what fascinate me with gardening all around, that the layers of human history that get carried with a plant.
Absolutely. And the emotional connections, for sure.
Exactly.
And I think plants really do connect us to our ancestors. You know, I feel so connected to my grandma when I garden, and she's passed, but, you know, I feel her lineage in me when I interact with plants. And I know a lot of other people feel that way too. But your book, I've gotten a sneak peek at your book. It's awesome. And I think the fun thing with how specific your book is, you know, if you're a gardener, you're always looking for the next cool plant to experiment with. I feel like, you know, plant people don't ever just settle like figuring like, yeah, these are the 30 plants I have and I'm not doing anything else. We're always looking for something to play around with or learn more about. You know, bulbs are super foreign to me, but I can't wait to start planting them and waiting, that whole experience even of just planting something in that practice of patience to kind of wait with anticipation for it to come, you know, above ground the following season. There's life lessons to be learned in bulbs, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. So where can people find the book and where can people maybe come check out your nursery and learn more about you?
So my website is my name, jinxfarmer.com. And it's JenksFarmer. And on our website, we have lots of pictures of crinums in gardens and crinums being used. And then we also have essays and writing. And I do all kind of writing. I think I try to incorporate some of the life lessons that you were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. We also have we have interns, and I ask all of our interns to write for my website too. So our latest post on our blog was done by a young man who's been working with me since he was 16 and has now gone off to college. So the book, our books, we have, I have three different books, actually. The Crinum book is the newest, a book called Funky Little Flower Farm, and then a book called Deep Rooted Wisdom. And those are all on the website, but you can also get books like that. They're on Amazon. So if it's easier for people to do, to order on the internet, then that's fine. We try to make the website fun and interactive. We do social media stuff. Like we have a farm class every other Saturday or so on Facebook. And it's not polished. It's not like refined videography. It's just us walking around with an iPhone camera and talking about what's going on in the garden at any given time.
Very cool. Well, we'll make sure to link all of those links in the show notes so people can grab your book. So many photos, and just like you said, so many stories, and follow you on social media. So thank you so much for educating us about bulbs and crinums. And I can't wait to kind of go down a further warp hole of exploring all of the different colors and flowers.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Thank you so much, Jenks. This was such a fun episode. You know, Billy and I have been living in rentals for the last year and a half. I'm like dreaming of our new house because we have one more move under our belt. And I've just been dreaming of like a perennial flower garden, or just planting a lot of bulbs and more perennial stuff in our home once we own it. So I know that bulbs are going to play a large part in our next home. And I can't wait to get there, plant friends. Oh my God, I'm going crazy. But anyway, Jenks is fabulous. He's so, so smart. You should check out his book on crinums. It's really interesting. He sent me a sneak peek of it. He also has other books that we've listed in the show notes, in addition to his website and all of his channels, if you want to continue the conversation with him. It is just going to be the most fun spring, plant friends. I have so many fun things planned for the book release, for Growing Joy to come to millions, hopefully, as it hits the bookshelves. Lots of gardening things, lots of planty fun, really amazing fun guests in 2022. So stay tuned. And until next time, my sweet plant friends, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friend, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure that you're subscribed to the show on your preferred podcast player so you never miss an episode. And while you're there subscribing, if you wouldn't mind clicking over to the review section and leaving us a review, that would be tremendous. Reviews are so helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thank you so much in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Bloom and Grow content, we have so many fun options for you that I want to tell you about. First off, there is the free Bloom and Grow Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free, it's super fun, and it only takes 3 minutes to complete. You take the test and you get your plant parent personality profile, and with that, you get a list of your strengths and weaknesses as a plant parent, and most importantly, my curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are perfectly suited for you and your planty interests based on your results. The test lives at bloomandgrowradio.com/personality and can always be found in the show notes of this episode. Okay, plant friends, here's the really good stuff. If you are looking to really grow and up-level your plant parent skills this year, I cordially and proudly invite you to join the Bloom and Grow Virtual Garden Society, rooted in high-quality education and plant community. Plant friends, this is not your grandma's garden society. It's virtual and therefore connects you with plant friends around the world, accessed via our proprietary Garden Party platform and app, and has the best educational and community-based content and resources available to anyone. When you join, you get immediate access to the entire Bloom and Grow Garden Party platform and app, which is our exclusive space, off social media, algorithm free, troll free, with tons of amazing ways to meet other plant parents like you, like regional groups, daily conversation prompts, and even a plant swap space, which is pretty cool. And in addition to that, you get all of the exclusive premium society content, which is 3 monthly live calls with myself and our horticulturist in residence and beloved Bloom and Grow Radio guest, Leslie Halleck. all in the interest of helping you grow. Leslie hosts monthly Node of Knowledge plant science lectures and monthly office hours, which we call AHAs or Ask Our Horticulturist Anythings, where you can troubleshoot your personal plant collection problems with her. Think about that. You have access to a horticulturist to troubleshoot your personal plant care issues. So amazing. And then I host monthly Growing Joy calls for community development and to explore the plant care, self-care aspect of plant parenthood. Plus, when you join, you not only get access to the upcoming live calls, but you get full access to all of the replays of previous calls and lectures, like The Science of Plant Dormancy or Grow Lights 101 and beyond. So you can binge your way to your best year yet of plant parenthood. Please come join us. We're having so much fun. Learn more by clicking the link in the show notes or visiting jointhegardensociety.com. For anything else, plant friend, I'm here for you. Feel free to drop me a line when you have an idea for an episode, an event, or even if you're a planty business interested in sponsoring the show. And of course, follow me on Instagram and TikTok for daily planty silliness, musings, and behind-the-scenes podcast content. Thank you again for listening to Bloom and Grow Radio. It is my true honor and delight to always help you keep blooming and keep growing. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group. So if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible, so I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about five key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.